This is the Parents in Sport podcast. Amazing guests, honest conversations, topics that matter.
Welcome to season four of the Parents in Sport podcast. I am your host, Gordon McClelland. I'm delighted to be joined today by Head of Women's Psychology at the FA, Dr. Kate Hayes. Kate, thank you for joining us on the show.
Thank you very much for inviting me. It's a pleasure to be here. Thank you.
Really excited about talking about female sport, a little bit about last year and the success of the Lionesses that I know you were involved in and the potential impact that that's having on young girls around the country. But can you just tell our listeners a little bit about yourself?
I have been working as an applied sports psychologist since 2003, which is quite scary to think that that's how long I've been doing the job now, to be honest. I actually started working with British Diving all those years ago, and I continued to do that job right the way through until the lead into Tokyo. So I spent many years with that sport. So that's how I started out initially working in an individual closed skill sport. But then in 2011, I started to work with team sports for the first time. And I began by starting with a club called Harlequins, which is a Premiership men's rugby club. So I did three seasons there. I then spent some time working with our women's national England rugby squad. And then I obviously took the job with the FA. I've been 12-13 months, I think, into that job. And in between time, I led the psychology team at the English Institute of Sport for several years, from just before the Olympic Games in Rio. So I led the team into Rio and then right the way through to Tokyo as well. So lots of different jobs. Started out in individual Olympic sport, started to then work in teams, and that's where predominantly I've spent the most of my time as an applied practitioner over the last few years. But I led the psychology team, and I think there was 30 strong in terms of sports psychologists in that team working across all of the Olympic and Paralympic sports. And then, 12 to 13 months, I think, roughly, I've been with the FA. So a brilliant first year.
Yeah, I was going to say, Kate, I mean, you couldn't really have cherry picked that, Eddie. I'm not sure if you knew what was going to happen or you had a crystal ball. But, you know, let's move on to that. I mean, you've obviously had an incredible summer. And I know we sort of shared a few Twitter messages during the campaign itself. I mean, what are your thoughts now, you know, 6 months on, your memories, everything about that period and just being involved? I mean, it must just have been, you know, it was obviously incredible for us on the outside, but being around it on the inside just must have been amazing.
It was just phenomenal. And it's really interesting because we played the final, and then most of us finished off working that week. And then I went on holiday with my husband and my children for a couple of weeks, came back 5 days when we were back into camp again for World Cup qualifiers. And when we came together as a staff team and start, it was the first time we'd all seen each other since the tournament. And all of us reflected that it was the first time that we'd had the opportunity to really start talking about it again. Because you go, and it's the same with the Olympic Games. You go away and you do these, you have these phenomenal experiences. And then you come back and you're back in and around people that haven't gone on that journey with you to an extent, or they have, but it's been a different one because they've done it as a spectator, or and you're aware that you've been away from home for a long time. And quite often, how was it? Yeah, it was fantastic. And then it's okay, and what are the kids having for tea? And who's doing the school run? And do you know what I mean? So I'm still processing it, I think, to be completely honest. And it was brilliant to come back in that first camp and actually have the opportunity to start talking about what you're asking me now and the things that we remembered and the key moments and how that felt. And I think it's probably something that the players are experiencing also or have done over this last period. It's a whirlwind and it's phenomenal and it's such strong and intense emotions around a whole journey that takes place over several weeks. It takes a long time to process that and to work through it and to relive it and then to readjust to coming back into normality to an extent and the day to day. So I mean that I have so many fantastic memories. It was an unbelievable experience, and I feel extremely humbled and privileged to have had the opportunity to be part of it. And I think we're all still processing it a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, I can only imagine, from the inside what that may look like. Do you, that must be really hard as well, I'm guessing. That, you do something that had so much scrutiny on it. You're obviously aware of a sort of nation, I guess. So I don't know if you were protected a little bit from how it was on the outside, but then actually just coming back in and starting to get going again, that isn't always that easy for anybody, is it? Coming back from something that was such a high for many people.
Yeah, and I think there's two things, there's two pieces to that. I think one is around the bubble and the tournament bubble, and then the second piece is around the processing of that. And it's always been this, we've always tried to do this, the work as a sports psychologist when you're leading into a major tournament or an Olympic Games is all about how do you create a bubble around the players and the staff that enables you to focus on your business, to continue with your day-to-day, to ensure that you stick to processes, that things and that behaviors and don't change with proximity to the matches or to the games or to the events, etc. And it's a large piece of the work. And I honestly do believe that the whole team and everybody contributed to this, every single member of staff in the immediate team, the wider team, and the players contributed to creating an environment that enabled us to absolutely focus on the job in hand and our performance. And we did feel like we were in a bubble and protected from the outside world, for want of a better word. And it's essentially always what we've tried to create when we've been working with Olympic athletes and through the Olympic Games as well. It's creating that bubble that enables you to just focus on yourselves and what you need to do in order to be successful. And I do think we were incredibly successful with that, and that's hats off to every single person involved. And then the processing post competition, we've spoken a little bit about it within the FA around the decompression, and it was a big piece of work that we did as part of the psychology team at the English Institute of Sport post the games in Tokyo. And decompression is something that sports psychologists quite often would facilitate in and around their sports and the sports that they work with. But particularly for the Olympic Games in Tokyo, we went into that games off the back of COVID and lockdowns and everything that came with that. And obviously the games had been delayed by 12 months. And we always talk about going in fresh and staying fresh. And the reality for that games is there was a lot of people going in tired because they'd been trying to prepare for a COVID games, for want of a better word, and everything that came with that. Because of the delay, they were simultaneously then starting to look at Paris plans, funding decisions, etc. And so there was a real recognition within the system that the decompression piece and the processing of that was going to be really, really important. And we developed a method within the English Institute of Sport, the psychology team, around how you help people make sense of their emotional experiences. And it's about slowing down post competition to be able to then speed up again later. So that was widespread across the UK high performance system post the games in Tokyo, and we tried to do some of that work with some of our staff and players within the FA as well. But obviously scheduling is very, very different in professional sport, and as we've kind of alluded to, a lot of the players kind of came back in, took a short break, and were back in for pre-season and Champions League, club football, international window starting again. So, I think there's a recognition that that piece is important, and it's also working through that at a time where it's appropriate for each of the individuals and when they feel ready for it too. And when we came in, I think it's fair to say that everybody does that at different times. Everybody processes it at different times, and it's just trying to take an individualized approach with that.
I mean, I thought the players were incredible just that period immediately after it, and what they tried to do, their appearances on the TV, the interest that they generated, their willingness to talk to people. And then, as you say, actually, to be fair, watching the WSL this year, actually, fair play to a lot of them. They've got the club shirt back on, and they're away and gone. So I mean, that's That's amazing because we know through sport over the years that so often when we talk about the hangover from a specific season or a particular tournament, it's there because it happens. It's very interesting, and this is, I was talking to a good friend of mine. I mean, I spent a lot of time at the end of last year going to watch Liverpool everywhere, and I go quite a lot and went to the Champions League final and had been at Anfield when they lost the league on the last day, done all the cup semi-finals, done the cup finals. And I turned to him on the Sunday after the Champions League. I said, I'm done in with football. For the first time in my life, I said, I'm just not interested. I can't take any more. And I only think I've recovered this last 6 weeks, and I've got all my games in the second half of the year this year.
You
But
could have done with some decompression.
you can see how it you can really see just how it happens, how it's just hard to get going, no matter how much you may want to. And we've obviously got a hit. We can see that over the course of history in that as well, in different sports.
Yeah, absolutely. I just it is tough, and you can talk about the importance of resetting goals, taking the break when you have the opportunity to do that, and also talking about it. What I alluded to earlier in the conversation around us coming back as a staff group and hadn't really spoken about it for the previous 4 or 5 weeks, just encouraging that and giving people the opportunity to talk through their stories, share their experiences, all of that helps with the processing of it. So it's about creating safe spaces and giving people the opportunity to be able to do that and to be able to talk through what they've experienced. Because as you've rightly alluded to, it's intense and it's a high emotional cost. Tournament aside, even just the season, it's a high emotional cost, and you are constrained within timetables, etc. But being able to provide support where you can, giving people time, giving people the opportunity to rest when there's opportunity to do so, and ensuring that you're creating safe spaces and opportunities for people to talk about their emotional experience, to tell their stories, to start helping that processing piece is really important.
Yeah, I mean, you talk about that bubble around it. Did you have any awareness of the impact out in the public that it was having on young girls and the excitement that it was generating?
Whilst we were in our camp, it was very much business as usual. We didn't have televisions on in team rooms, etc. But people were allowed to make their own choices around what they did in terms of their engagement. But we very much felt like we were in our bubble with our team, focused on what we needed to do. We kept our processes very, very similar. And the time that it probably really hit you to an extent is when you drove into the stadiums on the team bus and you just saw seas of people and families. And aside from that, it didn't. I think it felt probably very different to us as the team than it did to those outside that were experiencing it as fans and watching the impact that it was having. I think we had the opportunity to experience some of those things after the tournament, and that's the best time really to do it. But certainly through that period, pre-camps into the tournament itself, and the time that we spent together as a team at our base camp, we've felt very much protected from that.
Yeah, I mean, as you, and probably just as well, because I think the expectation, the comments, the excitement, the generation of everything that was going on in society. And I mean, you're a mum as well, and I'm a parent, and even talking to young girls who play football. My daughter plays football and cricket, and just being able to share that opportunity with her, that you really felt that there was something that she could pin her hat on. There was stuff that she could sit and see. This was possible. I really felt for the first time we were able to do it on a massive scale with a huge amount of meaning.
Absolutely. And you talked about the players themselves and some of the media and their TV appearances that they did afterwards, and you'll see that they are unbelievably passionate, and it's a huge piece around the FA and the wider team around uniting the game and inspiring a nation. And they took their opportunity to do that and to ensure that post-tournament, they were writing letters to the PM and the politicians, and really trying to utilize their platform to ensure that every girl does have the opportunity to play football. And there'll be many players in that team and staff in the wider FA and people that have been involved in football that never thought they'd see the day where they'd go to Wembley and it would be sold out to watch women's football. It was just such a phenomenal period, and that is the power of sport. It does have the power to inspire, to create opportunities, to provide role models, to give people that belief that that could be them, and that there is a real opportunity. And yeah, you've alluded to it. You're a parent. I've got three children. Them having that opportunity to go to a sold out Wembley Stadium and watch phenomenal female players, athletes compete at the very, very highest level in an environment that was safe and exciting and brilliant. Just to hear the stories afterwards from my own children, but also from their friends, they're like, I'm going to work in sport one day. I'm going to be a player, or I'm going to be an athlete, or I'm going to be a physio, or I'm going to be a nutritionist. I'm going to do that. And they're growing up with the belief that those opportunities exist, and they absolutely do, which is just fantastic.
Yeah, and as you say, there'd be a lot of children who probably not aware of some of these wider roles, even the role that you have and some of those roles that you've alluded to. There, we're going to come on to that a little bit later on, but I want you to put your sort of parent hat on now. So you've allowed your psychological hat still, but you've got to be Mummy Kate now at this point. And I think of young girls out in sport around the world, and obviously I've got a daughter who's quite a good footballer and captains a county cricket side, and I have my own challenges. I have to do it very differently with her than I did with my son. She's probably told me that I have to do it very differently. However, she's kept me right from the age of 9 that this is what it's going to look like. So I'm certainly learning as I go. How do you think we support young girls in particular in sport? You know, we've got to understand why they play, what they enjoy. What are your thoughts for parents around that and motivating, and maybe some bits for dads as well, just to recognise that actually sometimes girls have very different reasons for competing than maybe some of the boys on occasions, and dad's approaches from the pub may not always work.
I think it's really, really interesting when we start getting into talking about gender differences. And there's a huge amount of research that's taken place within sports psychology around gender differences and whether that's related to confidence or performance or goal setting, etc. But in my experience, and even the research would allude to this anyway, it's about the individual in front of you. And it's really important actually not to make generalizations, because there'll always be somebody that won't fit that mold. And ultimately, I think it's about, as much as possible, really understanding the individual in front of you, what they respond to, what they don't respond to, what they enjoy, what they don't enjoy, what their triggers are, what their responses to stress are, etc., and being able to work with that. But in an ideal world, particularly within youth sport, we have to create environments that are psychologically safe. And by that, I mean environments where people are not afraid to take risks, to make mistakes, and to get it wrong. And youth sport provides a fantastic opportunity for individuals to develop their understanding of themselves and how they operate. And quite often, and you see this when you work with youngsters, and I used to experience this working with divers. I'd walk into a training session and they'd be like, okay, did you see that? Did you see that? Yeah, that was absolutely brilliant. Yeah. Why do you think that worked so well today? Huh? And it's because they're not yet at that cognitive stage to reflect on, okay, what works, what doesn't, why is that? How could I test that hypothesis? That takes some time to develop as our cognitions develop and as we grow and get older. But just encouraging that process really gently around reflection, and just ensuring that it's about trying, it's about making mistakes, it's about getting it wrong, because that gives us opportunities to learn. And I think so often the youngsters get so concerned with winning and losing. And if they won, it's great. And if they lost, it's terrible. And But actually, that whole entire period of youth sport is about learning. It's about being able to and being encouraged to take risks, to get it wrong, to make mistakes, and to create an environment where that's not only okay, but actually absolutely encouraged.
Is normal, Kate. This is one of the, I think, the big things that we found working across football, working with parents, is we seem to have got to this stage where everything is all about winning and losing. And even one bit of disappointment is the greatest catastrophe that's ever existed. And yet it should be happening 20 times a year, if not more. And we seem to have blown it out of proportion, and actually spending the time recognizing that. Actually, I think parents are pretty grateful just to think, oh yeah, hang on a minute. We've lost sense of perspective about what youth development looks like. But you see, I think that's the challenge then for parents, Kate, because I think if you haven't got a sports science background, coaching background, educational background, you've maybe been involved in sport, I think you form a lot of your views either through how the media portray sport or what your parents did with you or what your coaches did with you, which are often outdated now. And you bring that into the youth sports space. Yet we know youth development is very different from the professional game in many of its characteristics. And I think parents struggle with that. I think they try to bring one down into the other and they don't always fit.
It's funny though, isn't it? I've been reflecting on this recently, because at the highest level, everybody wants to win. Of course they do.
Yeah.
But wanting to win and focusing on winning isn't the recipe for winning. Having a really solid understanding of how to win is what makes a difference. And for me, that's the same through youth, adolescent, teenage, and at the very, very highest level. Yeah. It's what's our process? What's our game plan? What are our principles of success? What are our principles of play? What are our markers of success? How do we set goals? How do we review? How do we debrief? How do we self-regulate? It's all about the how. And for me, the youth sport piece is a perfect opportunity for youngsters to start developing some of those skills. Like I've got three children, 3, 5, and 12, and they're all active in sport. And for me, the reason why sport is so important is for health and well-being, absolutely fundamentally, but it's also for learning how to interact with peers, with other people, for developing relationships, for friendship groups, for social development. It's for learning about themselves and about others. It's for motivation reasons. It's absolutely not for winning. Not at this age. It's irrelevant. It's the questions that we have in the conversations we have in the car on the way home was it fun? Did you do what you hoped you were going to do today? And if you did, why do you think that was? And if you didn't, what do you think you might change for next time?
Yeah, but you see, you're too good, Kate, you see. That's
well, what I probably overthink it though, to be honest. Shut up, Mum.
but I think that's where you've got the benefit of your role. And actually, when you talk to wider parents around the world, sometimes just to even think about it in the way that we're talking very normally about, many haven't even considered. And it's certainly a view that I take with parents, because a lot of them will often say to me, you know, Gordon, how do I know it's all been worth it? So, you know, they've invested all this time, all this money, everything into the kids' sport. And I say, look, we've got to remember first and foremost that kids aren't commodities. They're human beings. We're not playing the stock market here. You can't expect to return in an outcome. I said, if we could guarantee outcomes, I said, we'd be laughing. We wouldn't be sat here now. We'd be bottling it up and selling it in any way we can. But actually, if parents use sport, which still remains today one of the safest vehicles to equip their children with a wide range of character and life skills, so things like determination, resilience, confidence, good communicators, good decision makers, adaptable individuals, creative individuals, self-organized individuals. But we can only do that if we value that terminology with our kids. And if we see our children displaying those traits, that we cheer it with them and we talk to them about it. But the best bit for parents is it gives us far more to talk about on a given week if we're viewing the success of the sport through the development of those skills. as opposed to did you win, did you score, were you the best player? The answer's no, that's the end of the dialogue. And our kids go away thinking that that's all we ever value as parents is in winning and outcomes. But so many have never considered what some of the things we're talking about here.
Yeah, and I you know, the winning piece is important. People
Yes.
do like to win, and I think we do
Yeah.
need to help people understand and encourage that. It just can't be the be all and end all. It can't be all about that.
Absolutely.
I think back to when I was a kid, and I used to run, and I used to do 1500 meters, 800 meters, and I still remember vividly. It was my dad that always used to take me to my races at the weekend, and we used to sit in the car and just talk about tactics. But essentially what he was helping me do was figure out what the process was. And so then I wasn't going into races thinking about I have to win. I was going into races thinking I need to get off fast off the start. I need to settle in after 200 meters. I need to, and I had a race plan, and it helped me no end. And I think that, you know, sports psychology aside or not, my dad wasn't a sports psychologist, but he understood that I used to get really, really anxious and used to help me with that by just breaking it down and simplifying it and giving me a plan. And then it wasn't about can you win or not, it was about can you do the plan, and if you can't, that's okay, but let's review it and let's figure out a different one for next time, or let's make tweaks. And it ends up becoming a problem solving exercise, which actually is then quite fun. You're learning how to do something, how to put plans in place, how to execute plans. You learn about why you are and are not able to do that at different times, and I still remember it vividly, and I'm talking several years ago now, obviously.
Not that many, Kate, but yeah. But I think the I think that learning piece is important, that we see it as a constant learning process, isn't it? It's something that's dynamic, it's something that's evolving all the time, that we're taking learning from even the very best days but also the very worst, because in effect, it's helping our children learn to perhaps manage it better the next time around. We can only do that if we go through, you know, those experiences. And that's when I said, goes back to what we were talking about earlier, that we've got to understand that for young people in sport, these highs and lows are normal. And we've got to normalize them a lot more and have this type of conversation as opposed to, you know, extremes off each end of the scale.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Talking of these sort of personality character traits, obviously you've worked with some of the top performers across a number of sports. You know, what do you see in I guess elite performers, some of those sort of skills we had alluded to there, some of those characteristics? What do you think most of them have, or perhaps some of the things they have to learn to develop, or are there any common themes, or is everybody's makeup very different?
I think everybody's makeup is very different, but I think to some of the most successful athletes that I've worked with, and what have they all had in common has been a drive either to be the best in the world or a drive to improve. It's a relentless focus on success. And the ones that are able to navigate that successfully are the ones that are able to be, I think, objective about how they review performances. It's quite common for high achievers to have high levels of perfectionism, but you can use that adaptively or maladaptively. And it's about being able to review training sessions, performances around what did I get right? And what was the reason for getting that right? And what wasn't good enough? And how could I change that? And they're able to, that with support at times, be quite objective about how they review, but they've just been relentless at no stone unturned, doing absolutely everything within their capability to be able to improve. And I think the motivational piece is a really interesting one, particularly in team sports, because when you've got a group of individuals, quite often they're all motivated by very different things, some intrinsically, some extrinsically. Some want to be, some just want to wear an England shirt, some want to be the best player in the world, everybody's different in terms of what's important to them. But having something that you're striving for and you're relentlessly striving for, I think is really, really important. And then absolutely fundamentally is the learning how. So everybody at the highest level wants to win. Everybody does. Everybody at any level in sport to an extent wants to win. It's part and parcel, isn't it, of of sport. But they all have an absolute understanding of how and what their process is and what they need to do and how their routines that they need to execute, their focus of attention, their mental skills. They have all developed their method and their process to in enhance the chances of success. And
Yeah.
without fail, there's not a single Olympic athlete that doesn't understand how to perform. And that's not to say that they all skip in there thinking, brilliant, it's all picnics in the park, today's going to be the greatest fun in the world. It's fair to say that there's a lot of people line up for an Olympic final rather wishing they'd rather be anybody anywhere else in the world at that moment in time. But they understand that's going to happen. It's completely normal, and they know that they have a process that stands up against that and is still going to enable them to perform successfully.
Yeah, absolutely. I want to touch on the intrinsic, extrinsic bit because obviously, again, we like to box people up, don't we? And we say, obviously, the greatest form of motivation is the intrinsic one. But actually, in some scenarios, that extrinsic motivation is huge. It doesn't necessarily mean it's the healthiest form of motivation, but it's still a form of, can be an amazing source of motivation. Are most intrinsically motivated as they're going through? I think I'm thinking more about I'm thinking about sports parents here, and I'm thinking about some of the challenges we see. And you talk about ultimately your kids got to want to do it, and try not to reward them on goals scored and some of the extrinsic values and the things we post on social media. You know, as they're growing up, that actually we want to keep a lid on it, let them develop it intrinsically, and let the drive come from them rather than it being forced by us. What are your thoughts around that?
I think there's so much variance in there, isn't there? Like I'm thinking of a particular athlete that I've worked with that I've worked with as a junior right the way through their transition, and from the very, very early stages, it was all about winning. And actually, that's okay because there was a there's such a high motivation to win. But then you automatically get to, okay, so then what do I need to do in order to win? And if that's what I need to do, then how do I do that? And I don't, you know, when we talk about youngsters and we talk about goal setting, there's nothing wrong with having outcome goals, but the performance and the process goals are really, really important as well. And it's almost like, well, we can talk about winning, we want to win. Of course, we want to win, everyone wants to win. But how are we going to do that? How are we going to maximize our opportunity to be successful? Because that's the thing that's actually going to make the difference between whether we win or whether we lose, is that how good are our strategies? How good is our process, and how well do we understand the role and how to execute that? So it's fine to, you know, say well done to the kids on winning, on scoring goals, all the rest of it. But equally, it's about reinforcing some of the other stuff around that.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right there. I mean, yeah, this will make you smile. In every parents' workshop I do, I always start with a disclaimer. And one of those disclaimers is obviously I'm not here to preach to you or tell you how to parent, because that really wouldn't be very cool. And some of the places I've spoken in, I wouldn't have got out of with that attitude. So obviously there's that. But I do finish with that I'm not one of those happy, clappy, laissez-faire parents who doesn't value winning and competition. And I feel like I have to say it because A, it's true. But B, I'm also realistic enough to know that it's still a fundamental part of sport. But what we've got to be better at is, as you say, it's not the only success criteria. We've got to be better at having a much wider lens on it, I think.
Yeah, 100%. And I think, you know, from a sports psychologist point of view, what for me it's about is an athlete or is a team able to execute their best under pressure? And that's success for me. If that's good enough to win, then brilliant. And if it's not, then so be it. The chips fall as they may. But ultimately, the goal is about creating an environment, creating the skills, the strategies to give people the best opportunity for success. And success is about them being able to reproduce their best in competitive moments. And sometimes that's enough to win, and sometimes it isn't.
Yeah,
But
absolutely. And I was going to say that because we're also not in control of outcomes, are we? We're only in control. Well, we're only in control of how we can get to those outcomes because we don't know what's going to happen on a given day.
yeah, exactly. Are we? Yeah, no.
I probably worded that. I know where you go. It's the way I've probably worded that, but you can control your processes more than an external factor, can't you? You know, if we were turning up at a gymnastics competition, we've got to concentrate on what we're doing because we never know if the next Simone Biles is next to us. So we could end up.
100%.
We
They
can.
100%. And closed skills are interesting, aren't they? So diving is a great example of that, which is a sport that I worked in for many years. It's your performance is not influenced by others. It's not a team sport. It's not a dynamic sport. There's not decision making. It's about you being able to stand up there and execute a skill as well as you can six times under pressure in a competitive moment. And that is all about what is your process? What's your capability? What's your process around that? It's about skill execution and being able to do that under pressure. Team sport is different, obviously, because there's a highly dynamic nature to it, and there is decision making, and your performance to an extent depends upon your teammates, the people around you, the decisions that they make, the decisions the opposition make, etc. And that's where your strategy and your game plan and those elements become so important. Being able to anticipate what somebody else is going to do, make predictions, respond accordingly, be proactive versus reactive, all of those things, which makes it so fascinating.
I mean, it's a fascinating mix, even talking to you today on this. I mean, I think we've probably covered far more topics than we originally set out to. Final question, because I'm conscious of the time. You alluded to earlier you've obviously had an amazing career in sport as a female at a time when I'm guessing it was pretty hard to sort of make inroads. Hopefully it's a little easier now. People like yourself have really paved the way for the next generation. Certainly the footballers did this summer. I mean, what other careers have we got around sport other than obviously everybody perhaps wanting to be an Olympian or a professional? What else can we get young girls into or interested in around the sport in general?
There are so many opportunities. And you know, from coaching to the sport sciences, nutrition, physio, doctor, psychologist, strength and conditioning coach, to then commercial marketing, there literally any interest could take you into sport if you had an interest in sport. And I do think that that's something that we could potentially do better in terms of giving people, opening people's eyes to the opportunities. The reason I followed this career path was because I was a young athlete who just wanted to be the next Sally Gunnell, Kelly Holmes. I grew up in the time of Linford Christie, John Regis. Like, I went to every track meet that was available to go and watch. And I just wanted to be a runner, and that didn't work out for me. But when it came to making decisions later on in life, I know that if I was competing on a Saturday, by Wednesday I was already getting nervous. And so the psychology around that really interested me. And at that time, when I went to university, sports psychology wasn't a big thing. But I did so I did I went and studied psychology, just straight psychology. And towards the end of my degree, I started to look at, well, is that could this be applied to sport, and does that exist? And did a bit of research around sports psychology, and found that there was a master's course at Sheffield Hallam, and I went and studied there, and then I stayed on and did my PhD and followed that as a career path. But nobody, and myself included, went to university not knowing that that wasn't even an option. And it's really funny, actually, because my daughter came home from school a couple of weeks ago, and they'd been talking about the summer and the first week back, and that they talked about the success of summer, and they talked about the Lionesses and the Euros, and they asked the kids what jobs to exist in sport. And my daughter put her hand up and said sports psychology, and I think she got a house point for that because it was a unique answer, but nobody knows. And that for me is what's been brilliant about taking my kids and their friends to some of the sporting events over this last year and previous to that, is because they see women on a pitch, they see medics running on, they see physios, they see they see it, and you know, that it's that piece, isn't it? You have to see it to believe it. I think giving people the opportunities to just see what's out there and what career paths they could follow. Yeah, I think there's more we could do in that respect.
Yeah, and you're absolutely right. You know, if you see, you believe it. I was just thinking about your comment about the athletics meets you used to go and watch. And I had Liz McColgan on the podcast not so long ago, and we were just talking about it because in that era we grew up, it was Friday Night Diamond League, and you knew everybody.
Exactly I grew up in South London, so we used to go to Crystal Palace to watch all the events there.
But that's what it was. And actually now,
Yeah.
when you talk in, you know, with young people or go into schools and you maybe talk to some young people about sport, sometimes they haven't even watched the game on the weekend, which would have been very normal. Or you ask, did you see the world record go in the marathon? And the lack of awareness yet. When I was growing up, that was a really big thing. Now, I don't know if that's just because we're diluted with what we only had the one slot each week, didn't we? Sunday afternoon football, bit of Diamond League on a
You
Friday.
know, I do think there is a bit of that. Like you probably in the nearer, I don't know, but of watching the Sports Sundays,
Yeah.
you know, there was,
Grandstand
yeah,
and sports night, FA
grandstand,
Cup
but
all day, you know,
we
that
had
was the
four
highlight of
channels
the
to choose from,
year.
and sport was the best option, wasn't it? So we used to get up on a Sunday morning, my brother and my sister, and we used to watch that every single week. But I don't know, like the kids are all active. Like I think now mine, because my eldest plays, obviously the little ones have grown up seeing her going off to football, so they want to go and do the same thing as their big sister. So my daughter's three and my son's five, and they're already playing football once a week.
Yeah, they don't. I mean, look, the younger ones have definitely helped. I mean, my older son's paved the way for my daughter, and the fact she just wants to beat him up has helped her massively. When it, you know, I'd be better than him as well. It's really
We
hard.
weren't doing that when we were kids. I wasn't. We weren't going to organized sport at the age of three, four, five. But not when we were kids.
No.
It came much, much later than that. And
Yeah, well,
so,
we made our own games and played.
exactly.
I still argue that I did far more with the football than my children because I would go out at 9 o'clock in the morning and I wouldn't come home until the lights had literally gone at night, unless I
Absolutely.
needed feeding. And so actually my unstructured play was way more than the getting in a structured session.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And that's the thing, isn't it? And that's where school is so important. And I do think that it's so varied. Children's sporting experiences at school are so varied, particularly at primary school, dependent upon interest of teachers, whether it's something that's driven by that school or not, whether they just do the minimum or whether they do over and above that. Are there opportunities after school? And you know, people have very, very different experiences dependent upon the primary school that they go to and then subsequently the secondary school. But it's so fundamental for setting kids on a pathway to getting involved in exercise, in sport, and enjoying that.
Yeah, and we've all got a role to play in that, and that's everybody, and that's why it's fantastic to hear from the likes of yourself on this show, raising awareness of what's actually going on the inside. Kate, thank you so much for joining us on the Parents in Sport podcast. Been an absolute pleasure to have you on, and hopefully,
Oh, it's been
we'll
really
get a
nice to talk to you.
yeah, and hopefully, we'll get a chance to speak again in the future.
Definitely. Thanks very much.
Thank you for listening. Check us out at parentsinsport.co.uk.